Good morning. This is Dusty Johnson, the Vice Chairman of the Public Utilities Commission. Today is April 11th, 2006, at approximately 9:30 a.m. We're having some feedback problems again, so we'll try a different mic. It is approximately 9:30 a.m. This is the time and the place for the Public Utilities Commission meeting.
Is joining the meeting.
At this time, we will joining me here in person is Commissioner Gary Hansen, and joining telephonically is Chairman Bob Saar. We'll call the roll to determine who's on the line. Representative from Golden West.
Present.
Who's on the line for Golden West?
Denise Thompson.
Thank you. Colleen Siebold from Quest.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Jim Paul, West River Electric.
Yes, I'm here.
Dean Pulaski, Otter Tail. Dean, are you on the line? Helen Nelson from Bangs, McCullen, Butler, Foy, and Simmons. Alan, are you on the line? Susan Stewart, Catherine Cunnert, and Matt and Mark Rottelvold from MidAmerican.
Catherine is here.
Okay. Thank you.
Dean Pulaski with Otter Tail.
Is joining the meeting.
Good morning, Mr. Pulaski.
Good morning.
Is Tim Eklund on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Craig Honoran? Craig, are you on the line? Mark Benton from Midstate Telecommunications?
Yes.
Dave Prozac from Otter Tail?
Dave Prozac, thank you.
Prozac, thanks. And Chris Madsen, did I hear you were on the line?
I am.
Wonderful. Is anybody else on the line that I didn't call? If anybody is on a speakerphone on the line, we would ask that you take that off. The operator thinks that might be the cause for some of the feedback. With that, we will move forward to the first item on our agenda, which is Consumer Reports, a status report on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by the Commission. Ms. Gregg?
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. The Commission has received a total of...
I don't know that we have much of a choice. Let's try a different mic.
Okay.
We've been told a cordless phone.
Craig and Rahan.
Is joining the meeting.
We've been told that a cordless phone might also be to blame. So if you're on a cordless phone or a speaker phone, please get to a different line. Or if you have the webcast on, that could also be a problem. If you're wearing lavender this morning, Ms. Gregg, best as you can, please try to fight through the feedback.
Okay. The Commission has received a total of 201 contacts since the last report was prepared for the February 28, 2006 Commission meeting. 59 of the contacts...
Ms. Gregg, let's hold off just a second and see if we can get a technical fix. That's even worse than when I was talking, so... I'm sure you're to blame. We will be at ease for a few moments while we try to get a technical fix.
Mark Benton
is leading the meeting.
Report was prepared for the February 28, 2006 meeting. 59 of the contacts involved telecommunication services.
Joining the meeting.
21 contacts involved electrical services. 25 contacts involved natural gas services. 3 contacts involved gas and electrical. 36 cellular phone. 14 to the Do Not Call, 43 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC, and 552 of the 626 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved, and 1,660 of the 1,885 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved.
Susan Stewart, Mark Rodwell.
Is joining the meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Gregor. Are there any questions from any of the commissioners? Hearing none, we'll proceed on to the electricity portion of the docket. We will move to natural gas first. We'll move that to the beginning of the docket if that's acceptable to Commissioners Saar and Hansen. NG06002, in the matter of the filing by MidAmerican Energy for approval of its 2005 Economic Development Report and its 2006 Economic Development Plan. Would staff like to go first or MidAmerican?
I think MidAmerican's on the line. They can proceed.
That would be fine. MidAmerican?
Thank you. This is Susan Stewart, attorney for MidAmerican Energy Company, and I have Mark Rodwell with
me. Ms. Stewart, we're having a little bit of a hard time hearing you here at the commission. Could you either speak up?
Is this better now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. My name is Susan Stewart. I'm an attorney with MidAmerican. I have Mark Rodwell from our company with me. I'm just going to give you a brief introduction. What you're going to be discussing today is our annual economic development plan filing. As you know, for many years, we've been sharing the cost of economic development through our rates, and currently at levels of $100,000 a year. We file an annual report with you on our efforts. I'm going to turn it over to Mark Rosold, unless Catherine Kunert is on the line.
Yes, I am.
Okay, Catherine, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Yes, before Mark starts, I guess I would like to also reiterate Susan's comments that we do have a plan and a budget that has been filed. We do budget $100,000. We are investing in our local communities and our local partners' efforts, and we feel that it's extremely important that we continue to do that and to continue to build and work those relationships in the 30 communities that we serve in eastern South Dakota. We dedicate at least 50% of our staff time, particularly Mark Rodwell, and then any resources that are needed or warranted are provided to South Dakota. So we look forward to our continued relationships and building and strengthening those as we continue our efforts and efforts of economic development in the state of South Dakota. Okay, Mark.
Thank you, Susan. Members of the commission, our program is very, very similar to what it has been historically. Major difference at this time is we will be working to utilize all of the carryover funds that we've sustained in the last few years to identify activities that will build up our area even more. For those types of things, we want to have a relationship, obviously, with the commission and with the Governor's Office of Economic Development. A prime example for something like this would be a labor shed study. An example like that that's in our part of the world certainly important from the standpoint of the demographics of the area. There are other items that we will be looking at and trying to assist those communities with, dealing with things like online assistance, websites, marketing materials, site information, building information, and those types of activities. We have had those activities in our portfolio for some time and want to work with the communities to build that into theirs. They may market themselves even better in the future. That, in summary, is the context of our plan this year. You will also note at the back end of the document is some data concerning the growth and activity in our service territory. We greatly enjoy working with the economic development professionals that we have in our service territory. They have some tremendous capabilities, and if there's anything that we can do better, we are always open to that and try to build the relationships on a continuous basis. Do you have any questions?
Commissioner, questions? No. Chairman Saar, any questions from you?
No.
You know, I would have a question. I know that MidAmerican uses the cost of labor, and Mark, that you and others work very hard to work on some of these projects. Of the $100,000, how much is for the cost of MidAmerican's time, and how much are actual cash outlays?
I think it's probably around upper $30,000 figure, 36, maybe $38,000 for the salary part of it.
All right, thank you. Any further questions? Staff, any comments?
Actually, Commissioner, considering your last question, according to the 2005 actual expenditures, staffing levels were 53,644. Staff would only comment that the budgeted amount was almost virtually identical to the actual expenditures, and that the proposed budget is almost identical to what was actually spent last year. So if the commissioners are satisfied with what the historic expenditures have been, there's virtually no change in what's proposed. So this is really where a matter where the commissioners are probably have higher level of expertise than staff. If it looks okay to commissioners, it's fine with staff. So.
That is a very kind but not necessarily accurate assumption on staff's part. Any other comments or questions from commissioners? Hearing none, a motion is in order. And I will move that the commission approve the 2005 Economic Development Report and the 2006 Economic Development Plan.
I second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. We'll now proceed to the electricity portion of the docket. And thank you to Mid-American, certainly.
Susan Stewart and Mark Rodwell
is leaving the meeting.
Now we'll proceed to the electricity portion of the docket and start with EL04020.
Is leaving the meeting.
In the matter of the filing by MDU for approval of tariff revisions. Mr. Singer, will you be going or MDU?
I don't think MDU is actually on the phone. I could be wrong, but
let's try another microphone, Mr. Singer. It's a little bit like playing Russian roulette this morning.
On June 1 of 2004, MDU filed to update its cogen rates that it pays for generation to qualifying facilities with the designated capacity of 100 kW or less. This filing was made in accordance with the Commission's Avoided Cost Order F3365. Because of similarities between this docket and the and docket EL04016 filed by Superior Renewable Energies regarding the Java project, staff and the company believed at that time it was best to wait with the completion of this docket until the outcome of EL04016 was completed, because that docket may affect the avoided cost calculation in this docket. At that time, there were no customers, so holding off on these rates and this docket did not have any adverse effect upon South Dakota cogeneration. On January 5, 2006, the avoided cost docket EL04016 was settled and the docket was closed. Because the costs used in this docket are somewhat outdated, MDU on March 27th filed a letter asking to withdraw the filing and close the docket. MDU has indicated that it will file a new request with the Commission on June 1, asking to update its cogen rates. With that, I would recommend that the Commission allow MDU to withdraw their filing and close the docket.
Any comments or any questions from commissioners? Any comments from commissioners? Hearing none, a motion is in order.
I move to grant the request to withdraw the filing and close the docket.
Second.
And I concur.
Next item on the agenda, EL05027, in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation, doing business as Northwestern Energy, for approval of tariff revisions. Northwestern? Ms. Bondry, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Mr. Docker. Good morning.
Mr. Commissioners, I'm Pam Bonner, Director of Regulatory Affairs for Northwestern Energy. I have with me today Jeff Decker. He's one of our regulatory analysts out of Huron. And Jeff is the one that actually prepared the filing, so if there's any really nitty-gritty questions, I will punt to him and let him answer. but today we have before you a request for some revisions to our electric tariff general terms and conditions. And the agenda does a nice job of summarizing what those changes are that are being requested. So with that, I would ask kindly for your approval of our request for the changes to our tariff.
I think it might be helpful for either you or Mr. Ducker to walk through some of the changes. I know the agenda lists them, but mm-hmm. I think that might be helpful,
okay.
particularly for those listening on the Internet.
There's not a lot of substantial changes. A lot of what we did is just reorganize what was already there, put it in what I guess the order that makes sense nowadays. We did make some changes to the budget payment plan language for customers who are on that, and I don't believe there's anything substantive as far as the procedure there. It's mostly just wording to allow a little more flexibility, assuming that we go to a different billing system down the road a little ways. It's just mostly just language changes.
All right, thank you. Staff, comments?
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner. The stair filing by Northwest and originally proposed changes to Section 5 of their electric tariff, which are their rules and regulations, which included changes to the following subsections: access to premises, owner's consent to occupy, extension of service, underground service, protection of company's property, metering, master metering, monthly bills, terms of payment, customer equipment, continuity of service and voltage regulation, and cogeneration and small power production. Shortly after filing, the company explained that changes to the cogeneration and small power production subsection would be withheld for possible filing at a later time due to possible forthcoming changes resulting from the 2005 Energy Policy Act. After discussions with the company, Northwestern agreed to withdraw newly proposed overhead line extension charges, an increase to the underground line extension charge, and new charges for replacement of overhead lines with underground lines. Staff objected to these increases on the basis of single-issue rate making and a lack of cost information supporting the proposed rates. After further discussions between staff and the company, further changes were made to the filing, including further clarification of the demarcation between customer and company facilities and rewording the budget payment plan to allow added flexibility for the company and various other clarifications and corrections. Having come to agreement on the rest of the filing, the only remaining issue which the parties were not able to agree upon is the proposed dishonored check charge. Staff initially took the position that, like the other charges or increases due to increases to existing charges, allowing the proposed increase amounted to single-issue rate making. Outside of a general rate proceeding and without adequate information assuring staff that the company was not currently already collecting adequate revenues to recover all revenue requirements, including a dishonored check expense, staff could not support an increase to this charge. Stated another way, staff could not recommend approval of allowing an increase in rates for a specific expense without looking at all the costs of providing service and taking into account cost savings that may have affected other expenses. Staff also contended that at the time of the last rate proceeding, recovery from the cost of dishonored checks was not a separately identified issue removed from the company's recoverable cost of service. Even though the company does not have a separate bag check charge in its tariff, base rates would include recovery of this cost. In fact, staff historically has allowed this expense in rates, and the company would have no reason to remove it. Therefore, we would assume that it was included in the cost at the time of the last rate proceeding. Therefore, further increase in the charge for bad checks could result in a double recovery of this cost. Northwestern agreed to withdraw the proposed bag check charge of $30 and return it to the previously tariffed rate of $15. Staff responded that the company currently has no charge for insufficient funds checks, whereby the company informed staff that they had internally initiated a dishonored check charge of $15 in 1986 without a commission-approved tariff. Northwestern's most recent formal electric rate review was completed in 1987 as a result of the Tax Reform Act of 1986. There doesn't appear to be any record of this issue being specifically addressed in that proceeding, which is understandable given that was a staff-initiated proceeding involving all the companies that the commission regulated. Staff would submit that absence since removal, dishonored check expense was included as a cost of service for rate-making purposes in that proceeding because, as noted above, staff historically allowed that expense to be covered through rates. However, the question now has arisen of whether the $15 non-tariff charge was included in Northwestern's revenues at the time of that rate proceeding as offsetting their revenue requirement. If we make the assumption that both revenues at the $15 level and the expenses involving dishonored checks were included in that rate proceeding, the single-issue rate making and double recovery issues would be rendered moot because they were in that rate proceeding. However, staff would still recommend that the commission not approve Northwestern's proposed dishonored check charge at even the $15 level for two primary reasons. First, the company has provided no underlying cost basis for the rate they now wish to tariff. Rates enacted without an identifiable basis should be considered arbitrary, and customers should not be expected to pay a charge without a sound explainable basis, cost basis. Second, staff believes that Northwestern improperly implemented the dishonored check charge without commission approval. Granting them approval to continue to assess this charge sends the wrong message to Northwestern and other regulated companies that this type of behavior will be allowed without consequence. A certain level of trust necessarily exists between the commission and the companies it regulates, and when this trust is violated, it should be addressed by the commission. While we understand that the personnel responsible for this decision may no longer be employed with the company, those remaining may see the commission's acquiescence regarding this type of action as an okay to take further similar actions.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Jacobson. I think there were a couple of important issues raised during staff's comments. Does Northwestern have any reply?
Well, first of all, I'd like to address the NSF check charge, and I'll refer you to State Statute 57A3-421, where in statute you are allowed to collect a charge for an NSF check. And, you know, we're underneath that statute, so we would consider that we should be able to, by state law, collect the charge. We're not sure if this is a charge that should be in a tariff or not. In reviewing some of the other companies' tariffs, we've seen in a couple of them where they have it in their tariff and a couple they do not. So part of the question for us is this even something that should be in tariff, as it is something that is allowed under state statute. So we think we should have the right to do this because we're given the authority through law.
Ms. Bonnard, I'm not familiar with the statute you mentioned,
57A3-421,
and again, I'm not familiar with it. Does that apply to all companies doing business? I mean, that's not a utility section of the code.
No, I think it's the uniform commercial code, thank you. And it was something in code, but it was like uniform commercial code, and we do qualify under that. My understanding.
57A3-421. The statute is also in the initial filing of the companies. It's in there.
If I may just interject, this is Sarah Greff with staff. We have taken a look at this statute, and while it allows a company doing business to collect up to $30 for a dishonored check, it's not mandatory by any means saying a company has to collect the $30. And I guess it's staff's position at this case that while Northwestern is allowed to collect this charge, we feel that it still must be within the bounds of our rate-making policies.
Mr. Chairman. But part of the problem we run into then is what is our club, if you want to say, with a individual who chooses to write a insufficient check to the company. This is used by other retail businesses in South Dakota as a way to keep people, if you want to say, honest. in their transactions and dealings with a provider of a service. If they're in the position of having to make a decision as to whom is they're going to write a bad check to, then we have no recourse. And it's, you know, we do post it as the code suggests, is that we do post it that there is a charge.
Now, Ms. Bonrud, I haven't heard anybody on staff suggest that Northwestern shouldn't be allowed to have that club, but rather that it should just be implemented as part of a broader rate-making process. And I know Northwestern, and I'm not asking you all to go through that larger process at this time, but, I mean, any concerns about single-issue rate-making?
Not from our perspective.
I guess with this issue, we just see this a little bit differently. I mean, the statute says a merchant or place of business, we qualify as that. And again, if other businesses are charging this and we're not, and a customer's deciding where am I going to write my check, if we don't have that charge, we're maybe a more likely candidate to catch that check. But it just gives us some additional clout to help customers to make that choice to write a good check.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. Do you have any idea of what the total amount of revenue that you receive from the checks from the NSF?
I was told it was about 500 customers, and that's from South Dakota Gas and Electric. That's over the course of a year, so you'd be looking at roughly $7,500.
Okay, and if you were not to receive that $7,500 from the NSF checks, would I assume that there's an expense to running this through? Do you have an idea of what your expense is on the other side?
I don't write off. I would assume it's close to this $15. I mean, when I talk through the process with the people who do this, I don't even know that $15 would cover the process.
Okay. Dave, are you intimating that they should be required to get permission to have the NSF charge from us, or that they should not be using it and they should use it in a different fashion as part of the rate structure, or they should just get approval from us for charging $30?
I don't think that $30 is appropriate. The reason that I suggested that not $15 be rejected is because of the prior self-implementation aspect of this. Regarding your last two questions, I've copied off for everybody here, for the parties, the two questions that I sent to Northwestern regarding the revenues and expenses and the costs associated with this. I could hand this out. I have copies available for everybody.
Commission Advisor Rizloff.
There are a couple issues with regard to the ability, legal or otherwise, to charge for the cost of return checks. That may be true, but there's also a working capital component that's factored into the rate case. And so when that happens, when there's a cost of service effect, staff has to take account of that. Northwestern has to take account of that. Now, even though you put this charge into effect without commission permission, I believe it was 1985, that cost should have been embedded into rates by the time we completed the TRA or Tax Reform Act cases. So that was taken account of in that case. So that wouldn't be single issue rate making to look at the $15. Expanding it to $30 would. I think what Dave suggested, because there will be no single issue rate making effect, is that you merely file something to support the $15, come back before the commission, and I think they should be able to approve it without violating any regulatory principles whatsoever, which will leave you with your club and the commission with their support, and everyone should be happy, I would think. So it's just merely a matter of supporting that $15, and I wouldn't think that would take a whole lot of work or a whole lot of effort.
What perfect comments to clarify and crystallize the issue. Thank you, Mr. Rizloff. Did Northwestern have an opinion toward that suggestion?
Yes, we would gladly do that.
Any other? Yes, Mr. Jacobson.
Just one of the other questions that the commissioners had about the other companies, or maybe the company brought this up. I went through all of the regulated gas and electric companies. Everybody has a tariffed bed check charge except for MDU Electric. The last time they filed their rate case was 22 years ago. And Northwestern is the only one that doesn't. So it's commonly tariffed and taken into account as a revenue and expense in rate case proceedings. It a little bit concerns me when the company says it doesn't know whether this is a regulated charge or not, because it leads back to the question of whether the revenues and or the expenses were included in the 1987 rate case. Now, if they considered it at that time, you know, did they take the time to remove the revenues? Did they include the expenses at that time? I mean, if they considered it non-regulated, to do it right, they would take out both the revenues and expenses. If they considered it regulated, then, you know, but we don't have any information on whether they did one or the other or both or, you know, however that works. So it leaves another question. Unfortunately, that probably won't be able to be answered because there aren't any. You know, I've gone through my TRA materials and it wasn't addressed. It's not a large dollar amount, as you understand. And so,
Mr. Jacobson, would staff have any concerns with? Would staff object to the inclusion of the $15 if the reasonableness was established by the company?
No, I think that's doable. I just think that the commission needs to make sure that. If there's any question at all on whether a rate which is associated with providing utility service should be tariffed, the company should absolutely come before the commission or the staff and actually ask whether that revenue-generating fee should be in tariff or not, instead of just doing it internally and not making any mention of it. There needs to be a message sent out that's not appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Does Northwestern have any comment regarding the self-imposition of this NSF fee in 1986, 85?
No, neither Pam nor I was with the company in 1986, and I went through a lot of boxes in the storage trying to find information on this, both in the back to the 1980 case and in the latter case, and I couldn't find anything on it.
If I may. That's one of the reasons we are here today, is because is when we went through this tariff process with staff that we realized that it hadn't been in tariff before. And quite frankly, we were kind of here throwing ourselves on the mercy of the commission, as it wasn't until we were working through this process that we realized it hadn't been in tariff. And that's why we came here today with the question, you know, if it's supposed to be there, let's get it fixed and let's get it done right. And that's our purpose, is we want to do it right and do it the way it should be done and not being perceived as characterized as being dishonest.
Ms. Bonrud, staff had mentioned that in their review, they determined that this charge was in all of the tariffs of the other companies. Your research indicated differently?
Well, what we could get into, we found it in two, so I stand corrected on that. If we misrepresented that, then I stand corrected. But in our quick review, we found two, and it just may be that we didn't look in the right spot to try to find where the other companies may have had theirs included in their tariff.
A question for staff. I mean, I suspect that this self-implementation of a charge like this is very unusual. Are there other instances in recent commission history?
Not that I'm aware of. Not. I mean, every charge is different. I mean, for instance, if a company starts a new rate, then obviously there's a lack of cost information to support the rate. There is a you don't know how many customers are going to participate in a new rate or something like that, but this is an ongoing established charge. It's been here probably before the commission took regulation in 1975. There have been bad check charges, and we commonly see companies increase this charge during rate cases because the statute has a tendency to ratchet up every so often. But you know, we always ask the same questions about supporting the cost basis and that type of thing. So, and I understand the comments I make about personnel to Northwestern Public Service do not apply to the people here today, because I know they weren't here. I mean, we're talking about former management or whatever.
Mr. Rizzolatti?
But I know who they were.
We just want to do the right thing here.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I do have a question whenever we have an opportunity.
Yes, of course.
Greg Rizlov, with some of your earlier comments, I guess the question I have is, when you look back at one of the issues that Mr. Jacobson raised, which was the, you know, possibly this charge already being a part of base rates, I mean, do you think that's the case, or, you know, extrapolate a little bit more on what you discussed about this not being a problem, bringing it back in at a later point in time? Because, you know, I'm grappling with that. I mean, it seems to me they had a rate case. We set their rates. They had the opportunity to bring in costs. Costs are going to come up and go down. And you know, I do have some concerns about single-issue rate making and you know, the consumer's interest here.
This is Greg. If they instituted this charge in 1985, which I believe that was the date, the Tax Reform Act of 1986 changed tax rates, so we called all the utilities in. So the effect of this 1985 change would have been fully embedded into the cost of service at the time they filed the last rate case, both the costs and the revenues. Now, I know Dave has some concern over whether or not everything actually appeared in this case, was removed, whatever, but in this short-form case where we didn't look at all items, although I can't say for 100% that I know everything was there, I'm fairly confident it was. So when it came time to establish rates, the matching principle was being adhered to even though it hadn't been approved. We were seeing the costs go through the cost of service. We were seeing the revenues included in the cost of service. So when it came time to establish rates in the Tax Reform Act case, and they said 87, I guess I thought it was a bit later than that, but whatever, the matching principle was being adhered to, and it wasn't single-issue rate making at that point. Even though it hadn't been approved, its effect had been fully accounted for in the cost of service. So now we move forward 16 years. NWPS initially applied for a $30 return check charge. I believe that was ramped back to 15, which is exactly what they're doing now, albeit without commission approval. So in effect, by merely continuing that $15, you are not mismatching and it's not single issue rate making. All those effects, in theory, should have been accounted for 15 some years ago.
Well, they are getting their, you know, their current rate charge though, and then now they're going to get and you know, whether they should or shouldn't have done it, aren't they getting additional, aren't we okaying them to get an additional $15 on top of that?
No, this is just, they've always been doing this. I mean, I shouldn't say always, but they've been doing it since 1985. They've been charging 15. All I'm suggesting is that you merely make it legal, so to speak.
Well, shouldn't that have been part of the tariff, though?
It should have been part of the tariff, but even though it wasn't part of the tariff, it was still part of the cost of service back then. So the effect was taken account of within the cost of service, the matching that we were concerned about. And that's what single issue rate making is, merely measuring all the effects of a change in the cost of service. That, in theory, was included back in 1987, 88, whenever the Tax Reform Act case was done. Even though it wasn't in tariff, the money was coming in, the costs were being expended. So in terms of strict matching and rate making theory, there would be no effect. Actually, the only effect you would have is by not allowing them to continue the $15. They could make some form of argument that the return granted back then should be bumped up if they lose that $15 revenue flow. But it's a small amount of money, so I don't know if they'd want to make that argument. All I'm saying is that by continuing the $15, you were on a in theory the correct rate making basis. There will be no addition. All they're merely doing is putting it in tariff, if I understand Dave's recommendation correctly. And they're just providing support for the 15, which they did not do back in 1985.
Well, I guess what I'd like to see, if they do refile or reconsider this again, is a little bit better developed argument from Northwestern. And I think the you know, I agree with staff. The UCC argument, I think that, you know, that's something that's a discretionary charge. I don't think that, that prevails. And I guess looking forward, I would, you know, hope that if Northwestern comes back with some type of revision or another alternative here, we get a little bit more well-developed argument on, you know, why this should be allowed.
Anything further, Chairman Sarr?
No, thank you.
Yes, Mr. Jacobson.
I would just add one other thing. The company has provided information about, right now we're only speaking about the electric tariff, and there's also a natural gas tariff. And I think the company intends to come back and file a natural gas tariff change to reflect, for one thing, the budget payment plan changes that we've made, and then they'd also come back to reflect this charge in their natural gas tariff. The company provided information. Right now the company has 58,673 electric customers, 42,010 gas customers in South Dakota, and the combination customers of the two, 23,951. So you can give an, it gives you an idea there's a lot more, quite a few more electric customers, but, you know, the combination customers will obviously can have the supply to them as being an electric customer, and it leaves the residual gas customers out there. So just that provided.
Would Northwestern support staff's recommendation to defer this item? Motion is in order.
I have one question.
Yeah, Commissioner Hanson.
I have just one question of either Dave or Greg. If we were not to allow the $15 NS and non-sufficient fund charge, would that cost then be borne by the other ratepayers, or would it be borne by the stockholders?
Absent a rate case, it would be borne by the stockholders. Actually, nothing can be borne by the ratepayers in a cost like this until there's a rate filing where that cost is included in rates, because there is no automatic adjustment for this type of cost.
Move to defer.
Second.
And I concur.
Thanks. Next on the agenda is EL06-002 in the matter of the application by Ottertail Power Company on behalf of seven regional utilities for a permit to construct 5.45 miles of 230 kV transmission line, 33 miles of 345 kV transmission line, the Big Stone 345 kV substation, and modification of the Big Stone 230 kV substation. Ottertail Power, or Mr. Madsen, presumably.
Good morning, Commissioner Johnson. I understand that the motion pending today is whether the commission is going to grant the application for party status to the city of Gary, which filed an application with the commission for party status.
That's right. The moving party would be the city of Gary. Who for the city of Gary is on the line? Anyone? Staff, any, do you know what the situation is?
This is Karen Kramer from staff, and they have made their motion. I don't believe they planned on being on the phone, and staff would recommend approval or granting of the party status.
Any comments from Ottertail Power?
Mr. Johnson, we have no objection to granting party status to the city of Gary.
Any questions from the commissioners? Hearing none, I will move that the commission grant the application for party status to the city of Gary.
Second.
And I concur.
Motion is carried. Next item on the agenda, EL06-006, in the matter of Ottertail Power Company's request for approval of revisions to its voluntary renewable energy rider. Question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve the revisions to the voluntary renewable energy rider? Ottertail Power?
Is leaving the meeting.
Did Ottertail want to take this or staff?
Ottertail is here. Sorry, we're hearing some people leave, and
There was a brief silence on this end. We couldn't hear you.
Well, that's my apologies. I should have been a little patient and waited for all those rats to jump off the ship. Please proceed.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Dave Prozik, and yes, we're seeking approval of three items in this petition for our renewable energy rider. The first item is a reduction of the rate from $2.60 down to $1.60 per 100 kilowatt hours. The second item is the removal of the effective start and end dates on the rider that we currently have. And the third item is to propose a refund to active customers as of September 1st, 2005 for the rate change. We've worked with Mr. Knadel on these items, and we ask for approval of these items. Thank you.
Staff, Mr. Knadel.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think Dave covered most of the items on there. Essentially, this program was approved as a pilot project on April 24, 2001, docket number EL01005, with an end date of June 30, 2006. The reason for the change this time is the cost for the program have decreased due to new lower-cost long-term wind energy resources, reduced renewable program marketing cost, and more significantly, due to an increase in embedded generation cost. Staff would recommend approval of the new rate effective for service rent or non-rent for September 1st, 2005, and approval of the company's proposal to refund from that date forward until the commission approves this. And the approximate refund is about $1,400. And I believe there is about 81 customers that would be refunded at some amount. And we recommend also approval of the removal of the termination date with the following conditions. That Ottertail to submit annually to the PUC the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission order approving Ottertail's composite energy rate, and also any data and any planned acquisitions of new wind power or contract changes to the existing wind power contracts. And Ottertail to understand that should cost exceeds rate for the renewable program, Ottertail will not be able to recover those deficits retroactively. And Ottertail to submit a summary report of the refund to the commission when the refund is complete. And on a refund plan, they're proposing to refund that over a two-month period. And that's how long it should take. Approximately. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any commissioner questions? Mr. Cain, I have one. I mean, as I look at this, I mean, whose ox gets gored? I mean, this seems like there aren't a lot of problems with it, but what did staff have any concerns about this?
Not too much. The only really concern I had was giving them a refund from September 1st. This is a voluntary program, and it included any rates at this time. And when the company does file a general rate case, they may consider putting that into the rates. But at this time, it doesn't have any effect on any current rates. And none of this gets run through the fuel adjustment or anything like that. So it's strictly, if the company makes money on it, they keep, and if they lose money on it, they're eating the cost.
Okay, thank you. Any further commissioner questions? Hearing none, a motion is in order. And I'll move that the commission approve the revisions to the voluntary renewable energy rider.
I second.
I'll concur.
Motion carries. Next item on the agenda, EL06007, in the matter of the filing by Xcel Energy for approval of its 2005.
Leading the meeting.
Economic Development Annual Report and 2006 Economic Development Plan. Question for the commission today is, shall the commission approve the report and the plan?
Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, my name is Jim Wilcox. I work for Xcel Energy in South Dakota. We come today before the commission seeking approval of our annual economic development plan and our budget, our actual expenditures for 2005 and our budget for 2006. The company would just respectfully request approval today.
Did staff have anything to add?
Thank you, Commissioner. Nathan Solom was the analyst on this docket, and he prepared a statement for the commissioners. Xcel Energy has filed for approval of its 2005 economic development expenditures totaling $100,000 and its 2006 economic development budget. All 2005 expenditures meet the economic development definition of purposeful intervention into an economy to improve economic well-being, including not only activities that may create jobs, but activities that improve the quality of life. This definition was approved in the original docket EL91004, establishing this program for Xcel Energy. The economic assistance budget line item was $17,500 under budget in 2005, while the rural development line item was subsequently $17,500 over budget. This compares to 2004 budget variances of $3,500 for the economic assistance program and $5,000 for the rural development program. The larger variances in 2005 were due to more requests for rural development activities than economic assistance activities. Due to the somewhat reactive nature of Xcel's economic development program, budget line items are soft targets, with the only hard target being the $100,000 total program amount. There is no change in the budget line amounts from the 2005 budget to the 2006 budget. Staff recommends approval of the 2005 economic development budget expenditures and the 2006 budget, with the recommendation that budget line items be viewed as soft targets only.
Commissioner, questions?
Good morning, Jim. Commissioner Johnson had a good question and something that we had pursued in the past on occasion when businesses were asking for approval on economic development plans. And I'd like to ask that question of you. How much of this is in-house cost that you would somewhat be occurring anyway, and how much is actually money that you're spending?
Mr. Commissioner, in the case of the Xcel Energy Economic Development Program, all $100,000 of this budget is being invested in community economic development organizations in our service territory. So there's no in-house cost being accounted for or paid from our economic development program.
I recognize that. Thank you. I recognize that Minnesota is a larger state and is obviously more populated as well than South Dakota, but can you give us an idea of comparison of how much is being spent in Minnesota?
Mr. Commissioner, I do not have that number in my head today.
Okay.
I could find it.
When we look at development in economic development in Minnesota, personally, I look at the monies that are being expended for wind development, especially in Minnesota. I recognize that you are captive to the payment of $16 million. I believe that's an annual cap that has been placed by the Minnesota legislature for renewables and for the purposes of storage of spent nuclear fuels. But how much of that $16 million are you able to tap into and receive towards economic development for renewables? Do you get any of that in the form of something like a production tax credit or anything of that nature?
Mr. Commissioner, if I recall, the $16 million is explicitly earmarked for the Renewable Development Fund, which is a program where it's money that goes to sort of an external group that is where Xcel Energy has a representation, but a majority of the board members are outside the company. So it's sort of not hands-off. We have some involvement, but the money is administered by an independent party. And They take requests for proposals periodically. I'm not sure if it's a regular every other year or approximately every other year. And then they let monies to successful bidders in that process. And to my knowledge, there have been bidders from South Dakota, but no bidders from South Dakota have been selected as of yet.
Those monies are primarily used in Minnesota, and I understand some of them may be used in North Dakota as well.
I think, as I recall, there have been projects let in Colorado, North Dakota, and Minnesota from the Renewable Development Fund.
Are the ratepayers in South Dakota paying anything into that $16 million through their rates in South Dakota since they received nuclear power? Excuse me, energy created by nuclear power?
Well, yeah, I'm drawing on my feeble memory here, but if I recall, we brought a proceeding here and sought recovery in South Dakota for the South Dakota portion of that $16 million, and the commission denied that request.
So the $16 million that's spent in Minnesota is solely on the shoulders of the ratepayers in Minnesota? North Dakota, possibly?
I believe that's true. I don't know about North Dakota. It seems like we ought to, despite the fact that North Dakota bidders have been successful, I don't know that North Dakota has yet approved their portion of the fund either. So I think it is being carried by Minnesota right now.
Do those renewable energy developers who tap into that fund then sell electricity to Xcel?
That is part of the project, that some of the monies can go to support or subsidize developers who are developing renewable energy projects that then ultimately do sell energy to Xcel Energy.
So, in essence, the ratepayers then benefit from the payment to the fund so that they can have less expensive. In essence, it's coming out of one pocket, going back into the other for renewable energy in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm not sure I followed that exactly.
All right. I'll help you out just a little bit. I believe, excuse me, that wind development is economic development, and that a significant amount of economic development is taking place in Minnesota through wind development. And just as long as we are talking about $100,000 in South Dakota towards economic development, trying to get some comparison of how we stack up against other states and looking at a $16 million expense in Minnesota, which we are asked continually by people, why is someone who has a farm in South Dakota that is partially in Minnesota can have wind turbines in Minnesota but cannot have them in South Dakota? And it's an interesting challenge that we have in South Dakota, getting the transmission lines to go through Minnesota and to cooperate with our fellow PUC members, PSC members in Minnesota. And I just thought this would be an opportunity for you to bring back a message to those folks that it's something that I am at least conflicted on. And I believe Mr. Jacobson had some help with me on my question.
Yes, I was just, you know, I worked on that prior docket that you're speaking of, that Jim spoke of. The one, as far as the wind energy being supported through the renewable payments, I don't recall how that works, but I believe that was involved with that. But to the extent that Xcel purchases wind energy, though, it goes through the fuel adjustment clause, so we do pay for that. So,
Mr. Krishner, I could respond maybe to a little bit of this. I don't know how to phrase it other than I just call for patience. I do think, I know that Xcel Energy has this commitment to Minnesota that has now grown to be what will be about 1,800 megawatts of wind by the year 2015. We're presently in the 500 megawatt range, I think, of having developed projects now. So we're going to see 1,300 megawatts over the next decade. And as we know, the Buffalo Ridge is a glacial moraine that extends into South Dakota. It's the finest wind resource in the upper Midwest. And without speaking to other dockets that we have open regarding other issues, I think it's reasonable to expect that there will be significant wind development in South Dakota in the next over the next 10 years.
I appreciate very much hearing that. The what was the number again you said of the amount of wind energy developed in Minnesota?
It's based now on a renewable energy portfolio standard, a percentage of our customers' energy usage. So it's not a hard target of 1,800 megawatts. It's based on energy, and then you can sort of convert that into a megawatt capacity number, but our calculation is around 1,800 megawatts by 2015.
What is the, I've forgotten what the present amount is. That's
well, there are really four commitments that Xcel Energy has made.
The existing energy that's generated from wind turbines in Minnesota, do you know that? I'm not trying to be harsh here.
The presence, it's in the 500 megawatt range.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have an exact number.
Thanks. And I forgot the number of megawatts that Xcel has in South Dakota. What's the amount?
As of today, nothing.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
If Commissioner Hansen is done with the woodshed, we'll turn to Advisor Rislov.
Excuse me. This is Greg Rislov. I'd like to make a couple clarifications. Yes, we pay for wind power, but $16 million isn't part of the wind power purchase agreement. And, yes, they did file for fuel clause inclusion. I believe I don't know if that docket's closed or it's still pending. I think I have I don't recall. It's been quite a while ago.
I think it was closed.
Well, it could have been. I think you and Dave Gris were going to take it back to Sioux Falls for further study about 3-4 years ago, and I don't know if I've ever heard anything since. But be that as it may, that's separate from the fuel clause and the wind power purchase agreement. The other thing is with regard to Commissioner Hansen's questions, what that $16 million is going for, there may be projects that are designed to eventually generate energy. But as far as I know, in North Dakota, they're using it to turn lignite into gold. I don't know. I don't know if there's actually any power coming out of that $16 million yet. There may be, but I think it was more of
R&D.
Yeah, R&D initial research type of thing.
Mr. Wilcox, I did notice a number of differences from the 2004 report compared to the 2005 report. Some projects have come off and new projects have been started. And I guess I want an opportunity for – I mean, I think both the Mid-American and Xcel economic development plans have a lot of good news in them, and I wanted you to provide you an opportunity to brag on Xcel's behalf about any of the new projects that happened in 2005 that you thought were particularly noteworthy.
Mr. Commissioner, I have to say, after 16 years of this, the years have started to kind of run together. You know, we have sort of developed an ongoing relationship with several economic development organizations, and so you know, there's probably not there are differences from year to year, but there are a lot of similarities as well. You know, I suppose one of the newest items that we've initiated is the Strive to Thrive program. It's something that's come out of our office. My partner at Xcel Energy, Jim Clark, has been using his faculty, I guess, as an adjunct professor at the University of Sioux Falls and those and students there to help take rural economic development to rural communities and help them organize themselves. And I think we've had some success there, though, been a partnership between Xcel Energy and those rural communities. And we have several communities now that have part-time economic development professionals as a result of the program. So I think, you know, if I had to pick something that's sort of new to our economic development program, that is a newer thing, and is having some success in rural economic development.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. Mr. Jacobson.
Yes, I know when Nathan was working on this docket, he looked up every one of the I don't think he was successful in every single organization, but nearly every single organization was available, had a website where he could go and see their goals and initiatives and stuff like that. So he has that information here. If you'd like to look, have any of those websites, he has their addresses. One other thing I would just mention with regard to Commissioner Hansen's question about labor being included in Excel's report, there isn't any. That is really not an issue that arises with a filing like this. It's an issue that arises during a rate case, because what, in effect, what this does is it caps the allowable economic development expense at the level approved by the commission, and anything in excess of that would be removed from rates under historical South Dakota rate making theory. That's what staff has proposed before. So this is really acts as a cap. And during a rate proceeding, we would ask, you know, what are total economic development expenses, including any salaries or labor that was allocated to this, and then make appropriate adjustment to economic development expense based on that. So that labor question really doesn't arise until a rate proceeding occurs.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Any other commissioner questions?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chairman, if I may.
Yes, of course.
One of the things I just wanted to make sure, you know, first of all, for my own purposes, but also in case anyone's listening on the line, and I certainly share Commissioner Hansen's advocacy for South Dakota wind and projects that may support research. But, I mean, just so I'm straight, this is a different docket, though, than that one we took up earlier that's dealing with the Renewable Energy Fund. I mean, this particular one is dealing with, I guess, what I call sort of local economic development projects. Am I right on that, Mr. Wilcox?
I think that's right. This program is intended to support local economic development efforts to attract, retain, grow business within the community, as opposed to, you know, specific technologies.
In my recollection, as well as on that docket, I can't remember if we either disapproved it or we didn't approve it, but I think it basically was you know, sent back with some commissioner concerns before we decided to go ahead and put that into the rate base, is my recollection.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's probably right. Withdrawing might be a better word than not approved, yes.
Well, fair enough. And for my two cents, I would like to see more wind and more wind research in the state as well. So thank you.
Well, I wouldn't want my silence to indicate disagreement with the pro-wind statements. So. Any other commissioner questions or comments? Anything else from staff or councils? If not, then a motion is in order.
I move for approval of the 2005 Economic Development Report and the 2006 Economic Development Plan.
I'll second.
And I concur.
Well, if it carries, we'll move. Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. We'll move to EL06008 in the matter of the joint request for an electric service rights exception between the Southeastern Electric Co-op and Sioux Valley Southwestern Electric Co-op. And the question for the commission is, shall the commission grant the service rights exception? Who will be going, staff or the company?
I don't believe anybody from staff is on the phone or from the company. So from staff, we'll take this. Nathan is not here today, and he wrote up some notes. Southeastern Electric Co-op and Sioux Valley Southwestern Co-op have filed for an exception to the existing territorial agreement in the northwest quarter of Section 7, Township 100 North, Range 51 West in Lincoln County. This exception would allow Sioux Valley Electric to provide three-phase service to a new pond site for the Sioux Falls landfill with a short extension from their existing service to the landfill. The landfill has agreed to this writing, or has agreed in writing to this exception. This exception is not a change to the service area assignments and would be terminated upon removal or abandonment of such service. Staff recommends approval of this exception as it avoids unnecessary duplication of facilities, provides adequate electric service to the customer affected, and promotes the efficient and economical use and development of the electric systems of the utilities as outlined in SDCL 4934A55. And we would recommend approval.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kramer. Any questions from commissioners? Hearing none, a motion would be in order. And I'll move that the commission grant the service rights exception.
I'll second.
And I concur.
Motion carries EL06-009 in the matter of the joint request for an electric service territory boundary change between West Central and West River Electric. The question for the commission is, shall the commission grant the territory boundary change? Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. I do believe that one of the companies is on the phone for this.
Yes. So, Mr. Paul, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Would you like to make any comments?
We've been requested by Mr. Hadrahan to provide a service to a new home that he is building that is in the present territory of West Central Electric. And we have roughly about 2,000 feet to go to be able to provide service. West Central has several miles to go, and so West Central proposed trading that section of territory, which is Section 6 of Township 6 North, Range 18 East, in Haakon County, to us, and we are in agreement with it, and I believe Mr. Hadrahan is in agreement with it.
Mr. Paul, I presume that with this territory swap, no other customers are affected?
There would be no other customers affected. Mr. Hadrahan's home would be the only home within that section.
Okay. Mr. Hadrahan, did you have any comments?
No, I don't. I'd just appreciate if they could service the new home.
Okay. Wonderful. Any other comments by staff?
Just staff would recommend approval of the territory transfer as it avoids unnecessary duplication of facilities, provides adequate electric service to this area, and promotes the efficient and economical use and development of the electrical systems of the utilities.
Wonderful. Any commissioner questions? Hearing none, commissioner comments or a motion is in order.
Move for approval.
I'll second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. We've already handled the natural gas portion of the agenda. And we'll move now to telecommunications, TC05-060.
Jim Paul.
Is leaving the meeting.
In the matter of the file.
Alan Nelson.
Is leaving the meeting.
Craig Henrahan.
Is leaving the meeting.
TC05-060 in the matter of the filing by Midstate Telecom Incorporated for an extension of an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates. And the question before the commission today, at least on the agenda, is shall the commission approve Midstate Telecom Incorporated's petition? And shall the commission grant the joint motion for a waiver? And shall the commission approve the settlement stipulation? Will staff or the company be going first? Oh, great. Ms. Rogers.
Good morning. I very seldom seem to have the opportunity to appear before you and request that you approve a settlement agreement behind this. But I guess today this is the first time for everything. Midstate Telecom is a CLEC operation. Midstate Communications is the parent, and Midstate Telecom provides telecommunications service in the West area of Chamberlain. We had initially filed for a certificate of authority and then a waiver of filing a cost study. I think in 2001 or 2002, I think, is when the CLEC actually started operations. And so we've been requesting an exemption since then. This year we did the same thing. We filed a request for an exemption and an extension of our waiver from filing the cost study. And we filed that in April of 2005. Since that time, we've been working with staff trying to establish what both of us feel is a fair switched access rate for the CLEC. And what you have before you is a settlement stipulation that has been reached between the parties, and we would urge you to approve it. It sets the switched access rate for Midstate Telecom at, what is it, 0.1150, 11 and a half cents. So this is agreeable with the company, and we would request that you approve the settlement stipulation.
Thank you, Mr. Singer.
On April 7th, I filed a memo in support. I think that memo probably covers just about everything. I think Darla made it very clear that this is for the CLEC. It does not resolve the ILEC switched access by any case. I just want to make that clear here. And staff would ask for your approval.
Commissioner, questions? I did think the staff memo as well as the settlement stipulation by the parties was very clear. Looks like a settlement certainly agreeable to everyone. And other commissioner comments or a motion is in order. I will go ahead and move that the commission approve the settlement stipulation. Is there anything else needed in that motion, Mr. Schneff? That the commission approve the settlement stipulation, approve the petition from developing for an exemption to developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates, and grant the joint motion for a waiver. Is that appropriate? So moved.
Second.
Concur.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next on the agenda, TC05-115. In the matter of the application of Deltel Incorporated for a COA, Certificate of Authority, to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. And the question for the commission is whether or not to grant the COA. Staff, Mr. Knadel.
Thank you. Deltel, Inc. filed an application seeking a Certificate of Authority to provide inter-exchange services throughout South Dakota on a resale basis. The applicant intends to offer MTS in watts and out watts services to residential and business customers. The company has filed a $25,000 indemnity bond with the commission and has requested a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402-8 as it relates to filing a current cash flow statement. Staff recommends approval of the application and recommends a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402-8.
Are any particular, you know, stipulations or limitations appropriate on the granting of the COA?
No, they filed a bond in lieu of those.
Okay, wonderful. Any commissioner questions? Hearing none, a motion is in order.
I move to grant the motion on TC05-115 according to recommendations by staff.
Second.
Concur.
Thank you. Next agenda item, TC05-197, in the matter of the filing by Northern Valley Communications for an extension of an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates. One moment, please. For developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates, will Northern Valley be going, or Mr. Singer, Ms. Graff?
I think you have an old copy of an agenda there.
I suspect that's right.
You have a draft.
All right, TC05-221, in the matter of the application of Comtel Telecom Assets LP for a COA to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota. Question for the commission is, shall we grant the COA? Mr. Singer, Ms. Kramer?
On December 22nd of 2005, Comtel Telecom Assets LLP filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide local and inter-exchange telecommunications service in South Dakota. Once all the state and federal regulatory approvals have been made, Comtel will be transferring, or excuse me, Vartek Telecom will be transferring all of the Vartek and Vartek company assets over to Comtel Assets, and including their customers under the VARTEC bankruptcy proceedings. The applicant in this case, Comtel, has provided the commission with a $25,000 requested bond. And with that, I would recommend that the commission grant Comtel Telecom Assets LLP a local exchange and inter-exchange certificate authority subject to the rule safeguards and with the continuing $25,000 bond requirement.
Thank you. Any commissioner questions? Hearing none, I will move that we grant the COA to Comtel Telecom Assets LP.
Second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. Next item on the agenda, TC05-222, in the matter of the application of Altel Holding Corporate Services Incorporated for a COA to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. Mr. Knadel or Ms. Greff?
Thank you. Altel Holding Corporate Services, Inc., the applicant filed an application seeking a certificate of authority to provide interchange services throughout South Dakota on a resale basis. The applicant is also seeking permission to transfer existing Altel Communication, Inc. customers to applicant subject to the notice requirements set forth in 47 CFR Section 64.1120E. Altel Communications, Inc. was granted a certificate of authority on March 9, 2001, docket number TC00198. Altel Communications, Inc. is separating the wireline business from its wireless business. In order to carry out the separation, a new wireline corporation has been developed and is called Altel Holding Corporation. The applicant is a subsidiary of Altel Holding Corporation. Altel Holding Corporation and Valor Communications Group are merging to form one corporation that is separate and apart from Altel Communications, Inc. Confused yet? Once the merger is completed, the interchange customers and assets of Altel Communications, Inc. will be transferred to the applicant. The applicant has filed a $25,000 indemnity bond with the commission and has requested a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402, Print 8, which relates to filing current financial statements. Staff would recommend approval of the application subject to the following conditions. One, that the applicant provide a copy of the customer notification letter in accordance with 47 CFR, Section 64.1120E, to the commission at least 30 days before any transfer of customers takes place. Two, that applicant provide the date of the transfer to the commission when it has been determined. And three, that Altel Communications, Inc. submits a letter to the commission requesting cancellation of its certificate of authority once the merger is complete. And staff would further recommend a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402, Print 8. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Knadel. I suspect that no one from Altel Holding Company is on the line. I didn't see anyone.
No, they're not.
Okay. Any commissioner questions? Hearing none, I will move that the commission grant the COA in accordance with the conditions recommended by staff for Altel Holding Corporate Services Incorporated.
Second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. Next item, TC06-001, in the matter of the filing by RC Communications for an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates. Question before the commission today is, shall we approve the settlement stipulation? And based on the settlement stipulation, shall the commission approve RCC Communication Incorporated's petition for exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates and grant RCC and staff's joint motion? Mr. Sanger, Ms. Greff.
Tim Eklund from Telecommunications is also on the line, so if you have any questions, but I think maybe to speed things up, I'll just go first quick, and if Tim has any comments, he can certainly make those. This settlement is essentially the exact same settlement that you just approved in the mid-state docket. One clarification that we do need to make on this is this company, unlike Midstate Telecom is only a CLEC. In this case, RC Communications is an ILEC and a CLEC. Its holding company, its parent company is Roberts County Communications, who is also an ILEC. But in this case, this settlement is only for the CLEC access rates for RC Communications. RC Communications also has an ILEC switched access cost study before us. That is not being addressed in this. This is just for the CLEC rates again. But with that, all the terms and conditions were the same as previously approved, and we'll answer any questions and hope for your approval.
Mr. Eklund?
Nothing to add.
Any commissioner questions? Hearing none. Okay. Hearing none. I'll move that the commission approve the settlement stipulation, and based on the settlement stipulation, that the commission approve RCC Communications ARSD 2010-27-11 petition for exemption from developing the company-specific cost-based switched access rates and grant RCC and staff's joint motion.
Second.
And I concur.
The motion carries. Moving to the final telecommunications docket on the agenda, TC06-002, in the matter of the petition for arbitration and approval of interconnection agreements between Quest Corporation and Dakota Electronics, Golden West Technologies Incorporated, Nextel West Corporation, Fantech Communications Incorporated, and Priority Paging Incorporated. And the question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant Quest motion to dismiss its petition for approval of interconnection agreements to implement FCC ruling and the T-Mobile order as relates to Golden West Technologies Incorporated and Priority Paging Incorporated. Who is first to that? Quest? Ms. Savold?
Mr. Commissioner, we have no comments except we would just ask the commission to approve our motion to dismiss. I believe we do have an agreement now with Golden West, and Priority Paging should not have been on there in the beginning, so we would just ask that you dismiss them.
All right, thank you. It doesn't appear as though any of the other companies have any representatives on the line or in person. Does staff have anything to add, Mr. Best or Ms. Graff?
No, staff would recommend, although I thought that Priority Paging was, there was an agreement reached with Priority Paging, staff would recommend dismissal of the other companies.
I'm corrected. Ms. Thompson is on the line for Golden West, I believe. Did you have anything to add?
No, I don't.
Okay, thanks. So Priority Paging should not be a part of the...
I'm going to have to double-check that, but I thought they filed an interconnection agreement.
Yeah, I'm not I don't think Ms. Evil meant that they weren't supposed to be dismissed, did you, Colleen?
It's my understanding that, and I can double-check this too, but it's my understanding that they have determined that they did not meet a paging agreement with them.
So, again, they should still be dismissed. Both companies should still be dismissed.
Right.
Any commissioner questions? Hearing none, I'll move that the commission grant Quest's motion to dismiss its petition for approval of interconnection agreements to implement FCC ruling in the T-Mobile order as it relates to both Golden West Technologies Incorporated and Priority Paging Incorporated.
I will second.
I concur.
And that concludes telecommunications. We'll move to the administrative portion of the docket. Number one, in the matter of the potential adoption of rules regarding eligibility, certification, and reporting requirements for eligible telecommunication carrier. Ms. Wiest?
Yes. I would recommend that the commission open a rulemaking docket to consider the adoption of rules. They would apply to companies that wish to become ETCs and also to certification of ETCs that we do annually. And they would be substantially similar to the FCC rules.
Any commissioner questions? Would any affected company want to make any comments? Hearing none, I will move that the commission open a rulemaking docket to consider adopting the rules regarding eligibility, certification, and reporting requirements for ETC applicants and carriers previously designated as ETCs.
I will, clear my throat and then second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. That completes the official agenda of the commission this morning. We do have a few announcements. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be May 9th at 9:30 a.m. in room 412 here in Pier. Commission meetings are scheduled for May 9th and May 23rd, 2006. A hearing in docket CT05001 will be continued April 17th through the 19th, or rather will continue on April 17th through the 19th, 2006, in room 468 of the State Capitol in Pier. The hearing will begin at 1:30 p.m. on Monday, April 17th. And finally, a hearing in dockets TC04-106-107-111-120-121-122-123-124 will be held April 24th through May 3rd, 2006, in room 412 of the State Capitol Building here in Pierre. The hearing will begin at 9 o'clock a.m. on Monday, April 24th, 2006. This completes the Commission's meeting. Thank you very much.